Sabrina, good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon, Johnny. How are you?
I am well. Sabrina, talk to me about the opening of creches, because this has been mired in controversy. Former minister, as she is now, Catherine Sabourin, produced a going back to creche, if we call it that, document, which I have seen most of the creche managers said was totally impractical and unworkable. Now, to use the old phrase, we are where we are. So, Sabrina, tell me exactly, where are we?
Right. So, I suppose to kind of let people know where we are, we just to give a little bit of background on how things played out within the early years sector, and I suppose to use that kind of colloquial term that people are aware of, kind of childcare, and how things played out. So, on the 12th of March, there was the directive given at 12 o'clock that the doors were going to be closed at evening. 6 o'clock, and immediately, you know, all of these services were shut down. It was a very quick kind of direction that people had to respond to, and they closed their doors, and children stayed at home with their parents and with their families for the duration of the lockdown. And I suppose the lockdown, it's still there to a certain degree. And as of today, this is the first day that some services are reopening. Now, when I say some services, it's because a lot of children who would maybe avail of the free preschool years through the ECCE services, those services, if that's all they offered, they're not opening, because they would not be open normally. So what we're seeing today is kind of the reopening of full-day creche settings. So, I think it's the stereotypical thing that people think of when they think about childcare is, you know, the service that opens at 7 o'clock in the morning and it's there until 7 o'clock in the evening, and they take children of all ages. So that is the settings. They're the types of settings that are reopening today. And naturally enough, it's not the easiest thing to reopen with the type of life that we're now leading. So, for example, the idea of social distancing is totally and utterly impractical for children, because it just doesn't make any sense. So there's been a whole raft of measures brought in to ensure that people and children can return into these settings in a safe and comfortable manner. And people may be kind of familiar with the back to work safety protocol that has been kind of published by the government, and it's a whole series of guidelines, and there is a whole series of guidelines that have been published by the Department of Children in order to allow these earlier settings to reopen. And I suppose probably the big thing would be, you know, people talk about these play pods and how children will be kind of kept within their own groupings. It's going to be a huge challenge for both the staff and the management of all of these settings. And I think the most important thing is that there's a good channel of communication between the staff and the management to ensure that the guidelines are being followed and the all of the different provisions are put in place. So that's really the key issue here. And the most important thing is that every workplace has appointed a COVID-19 worker representative. And that is the person who will liaise between the staff and the management in order to ensure that, you know, the guidelines are followed and people are aware of the policies and the procedures. So what happens if this happens, or how do I deal with this scenario? And it's probably the most important discussion and appointment that people are going to have to do when they're returning to work. And again, that person needs to be provided with all of the correct training and information to do that role. Because as we know, if you don't have the correct tools to do the role, it will be impossible to carry out that. So I work with the Big Start campaign in SIPTU, which is specifically geared towards the early years sector. And we have a helpline set up. And for any early years educators out there who want to talk to us, they can call us on 01961 7100. Or they can send us an email or send us a message on Facebook, whatever is the easiest, but you can find us at Big Start on Facebook.
Yeah, Sabrina, before I let you go, we'll get those contact details off you again, as per normal in these circumstances. I look with interest across the sea at our near neighbours. Now, when they went into lockdown, or whatever their version of lockdown was, they kept schools, creches, etc. open specifically for the children of frontline and essential workers. We did not do that here. Do you think we should have? Now, I know it's easy being wise and hindsight and all that sort of stuff, but what's your feeling on that one, Sabrina? It was something that struck me at the time that, you know, maybe it wasn't such a bad idea to do that.
It is, in the ideal world, you absolutely would have had care and provision for frontline staff. And if we take, for example, the people who are working on the frontline in hospitals and in kind of healthcare settings, it was one of the biggest challenges that faced those specific group of workers in being able to go to work. I can't go to work if I have nobody to look after the children. It's perfectly logical. However, given the unprecedented set of circumstances that we were in, it became became this massive problem where we couldn't seem to find the solution for it, because it's not particularly straightforward. Having spoken to lots and lots of workers up and down the country, one of the biggest concerns they had was, am I going to be putting myself at risk here? And it's a very reasonable thing to kind of question and to have to understand. I suppose, you see, one of the difficulties that we also have is the fact that early years educators are so chronically underpaid for the job that they do. They're not on anything close to a living wage. I mean, the average rate pays about €11.90 or €11.93 or something like that, which falls very, very short. So the undervaluing of it and the undervaluing of the work that they do, and I think, and then a request being put forward to put themselves into a position where they weren't particularly comfortable going into it. And the logistics of how this was all going to work was so complicated and confusing. And lots of questions were asked that I don't think that the people who needed that reassurance to do that work particularly received answers that allayed any concerns. For example, one of the major issues that faces the sector is the cost of insurance. And the insurance issue at that time, it came to the forefront again about, how are people insured and how much is it going to cost to insure them, and where does the burden of responsibility lie? So it would be ideal to have had the provision for the care of the children of frontline workers, but it's a very, very complex thing to administer.
Sabrina, something which has struck me, and it's a funny thing, because I was actually walking up the main street in Finglas. What day was it? Yeah, it was around maybe lunchtime or on Saturday. And not that I have ever frequented one, let me preface my statement by saying this. But the door of a nail bar was open, and I looked in as I was passing. And I kind of quickly did the maths in my head in relation to the amount of timber and perspex that was in that shop that would not have been there beforehand. And it dawned on me, now I was aware of it, but I just started thinking about it. Reopening businesses of any description where you're coming into contact with people, be they big people or in your case, little people, a lot of businesses are going to be spending a lot of money and are going to be out of pocket. Is this something that they're going to have to just forget about and write off, or is there a way of them being reimbursed?
Well, for the earlier sector, there is capital grants that have been put forward by the government, and there's a specific amount of money that you can avail of dependent on the number of staff and the number of children that you have in your setting. There are some supports in place, and I think that depending on which sector you're in, the supports vary rather wildly. I think some sectors have gotten much more support than others. I mean, coming from a family where, you know, we had a pub in the house, I think back to the idea that, you know, if this was 10 years ago, my mother would be, you know, trying to open the pub up today. And trying to actually figure out how that would all work, and also to do it in a way where you're ensuring the sustainability of your business. I mean, it's hard work, I think that businesses should be supported to be sustainable and to be able to put these provisions in place. It's not an option not to have these provisions there. So, I mean, the businesses need to be supported, because if there's no businesses, there's no jobs, you know, so they're all tied up in that.
To open it out one step further from that, if there's no businesses and no jobs, there's no economy.
Well, yeah, I mean, precisely, absolutely precisely. So, I mean, like, everybody needs to kind of work together, because this isn't something that's kind of optional. We don't have an option around, well, if you're coming in here, you'll be fine. We won't need the perspex. It's grand. I mean, this is about people making the best effort they possibly can in order to reduce the risk for not only the workers, but also the customers or the clients that are coming in the case of an earlier setting. It's ensuring the safety of staff, management, children and their families, you know. So this isn't something where we can kind of pick and choose or opt in or opt out or anything like that. Like, people need, and people and businesses and workers and everybody need to make the best effort possible to ensure that guidelines are followed.
Now, Sabrina, we only had the opening up a couple of hours ago, so it's very unfair a question to ask you. But anecdotally so far, have you got any feedback from the creches and care centres?
I'm always very careful about saying this, but it's been an extraordinarily calm morning. I think a lot of educators have gone back into the service today, and they are just so excited to see kids coming back in the door and to hear the noise and the hustle and bustle they haven't heard for the last 3 months. So, I mean, I've got fingers and toes crossed that everything is going smoothly, and that hopefully that, you know, the phone won't light up in the afternoon. I think it's a really, really big day for the sector there. You know, it's probably one of the most important days of the year. Probably that, you know, we'll remember the 29th of June and we'll remember the 5th of February very strongly, because this is the day that they're going back to work, and it's going to be a whole new normal. So, I mean, we do wish them the best of luck and to hope that everything does run smoothly. And I suppose just from the point of view that we do have a new minister, and with the Big Start campaign, we're very much looking forward to working with Roger O'Gorman, who's the new Minister for Children. We look forward to doing the business over the next couple of years. Hopefully it'll be the next couple of years and things kind of run smoothly and we won't be facing into any general elections just yet.
Sabrina, I started the programme at 11 o'clock this morning with our political analyst John Morgan throwing his eye over the new cabinet, and regular listeners, of course, to Near FM will know that you are a very politically involved person and a very politically astute person. So, in the minute and a half that we have left to chat, swap hats there quickly and tell me what you think of the new runners and riders.
There was a couple of curveballs in there, people I was not expecting to see. There was a couple of glaring omissions where I thought, well, you know, that person's going to be that minister and that person's going to be that minister. And it didn't turn out quite like that. There's been a lot of discussion over the weekend around the gender balance, and also the geographical balance is really quite startling. It's a very it's very heavily weighted towards Dublin and isn't it Cork South Central? I mean, three cabinet ministers for one constituency. Has that ever happened before? No.
Well, as you well know, the independent Republic of Cork is a law unto itself.
But extraordinary representation anyway for the south side of the city there. I mean, we just have to wish them the best of luck and hopefully that we can work in conjunction with all of the ministers and all of the various different portfolios to kind of, you know, carve our way out of this particular situation that we're in, and hopefully that we can, you know, that we can see good changes coming within society and like the economy, and that there's greater protection there for people who are working, greater protections and greater, I suppose, greater provision of public services as well. That's I think one of the things that has really come out of this whole COVID crisis is that the provision of public services in this country is something that every single citizen and every single person in the country needs and uses and relies on. And if we don't have a good public service system, we have a significant problem for how people can actually live their lives well.
Sabrina, I got to get you to change hats again very, very quickly. Do you think that as we emerge from the coronavirus crisis, and that's what it was, and probably to a lesser degree still is, do you think that we might have an enhanced and a better sense of community again?
I'm extraordinarily cynical, Tony. I would like to think so, but I think that we're going to... Humans are humans, right? We revert back into old habits extraordinarily quickly. It would be nice to see a kind of a sustained sense of community. I mean, you can see the changes that are already taking, that are already happening in the kind of in the wild, so to speak. If we want to have a good sense of community, I personally think this, and I think a lot of public health advice would kind of reflect this as well. If we want to see a good sense of community, we all need to start putting a mask on our faces when we're out. And it's not a case of doing it for yourself, it's doing it for everybody else as well. I mean, if we can continue to socially distance from each other and lash a mask on our face when we're in the shop, we're going to, like, that to me is a good sense of solidarity and community and supporting the people that are around you. I hope we can do it.
Sabrina Ryan from SIP2 and, of course, Near FM. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Sabrina, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been too long, but it's great to chat to you again. Thank you. Thank you, as always, for your contribution. And we will talk in the near future. Thanks, Sabrina.
Thanks, Tony.